To whom much is given, much is required. Part of that requirement is sharing. Culture is the heartbeat within our lives, and it's at the core of so many things. While we live in a time when we are starving for wisdom, I welcome you to your wisdom retreat at Culture Raises Us.
D.L. Moorfield, today's guest, is, I call him a creative's creative, who's had a relentless approach to branding people, places, and things. He's the owner of Goldfinger, which is his creative director service company, and has an illustrious career in the music industry, having worked with the likes of Outkast, T.I., TLC, Usher, to name a few. Before I have him kind of give us a little bit more about his background and his journey, we'll start with the question that sets the tone, bro. When you hear culture, what does that mean to you?
You know, nowadays, you have to be careful on who you're hearing the reference of culture from, you know, because they tend to make it very cliche. But, you know, I think that culture has always been the glue that connects our passions, our interest, you know, and things of that nature. And so I don't, you know, like now, you know, I think sometimes people use it in a stereotypical way, but I think it's bigger than that. You know, and being like a guy that has like a fine art background, like culture pretty much was like, you know, where you're going and what you're reading and things like that. But I think it's really, I look at it as it's the glue that connects the spirit of who we are as a people.
I like the glue. What's the stereotypical definition that you're referencing?
Black. You know, like we're doing this for the culture. That means black folks. You know what I mean? Just like how, you know, with some brands like multicultural just meant black. You know, but no, it's bigger than that. You know, it's bigger than that. I couldn't even say like it's a uniter from a mindset standpoint, because, you know, a lot of people have a different mindsets and different views on anything. But, you know, the common thread that runs through, I think, is the culture that binds us together or connects us together.
Yeah. And in that, as you talked about the stereotypical one, is that, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, there's a point within that where you have to look at it and look at the influence that the black culture plays within these other cultures that might be discussed.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I would definitely agree to that.
Yeah. You know, I've had the pleasure of obviously knowing you for a very long time. That goes back to, I think, even your LaFace days. And
right.
Your work has always been super, super impactful to me. You know, and I'm actually fortunate enough to have some of your artwork. And as I look at your journey of shaping culture, as we know today through your visual gifts, I've seen this constant like evolution of how you're creating, you know, or crafting, I should say, your ability to tell stories. And your art has often been recognized for its like poignant exploration of social narratives. And one of my favorite collections was actually from your American Flag remix, which I don't own yet, but we're working on that. Let's go. Tell me about how that aimed to kind of provoke this meaningful conversation and reflections through your creative expression.
You know, so I started making like American Flag remixes in 2012, and it stemmed from a conversation that I had with one of my mentors named Mark Scott Carroll, you know, the first black graphic designer that I ever met. But it stemmed from a conversation that we were having, and, you know, it was, you know, we were talking about like the ridiculousness of reality shows and a lot of times like how, you know, like they portray, you know, intentionally portray African-American people. And so, you know, I was like, man, we don't live in the United States of America. We live in the United States of entertainment. And we both started kind of laughing about that. You know, so then I was like, man, I should make a flag about that. And this is just kind of like through the conversation. You know, and so I started down this journey of, you know, like, you know, relentless note taking, which I take a bunch of notes, a bunch of sketches and things like that, you know. But the first thing that I thought of is like, man, like if I was to make a flag about hip hop or rock and roll, like what would those look and feel like? You know, so the first flag that I made was the United States of Rock and Roll, you know, and I wanted the flags to speak to the good, bad and indifference of, you know, of how people feel about America, you know. It's like, you know, like we're not all bad, you know, but we're not all good, you know. And so I wanted to speak to the honesty of it all. So the first one I made, it was strictly about just, you know, the way rock and roll music felt, you know? And so I made it out of Levi's denim and leather, used filament lights to kind of like spray out the stars. And this one was like the very first one. So it was a little bit more crude than how, you know, like you could actually see and feel it and touch
right.
on like the final delivery right now. And so, you know, I did it and I like, you know, hashtag Levi's and things like that. And so a former executive from Levi's seen it and bought it. And I was like, damn, you know, I mean, it was one of the fastest, like, piece completion to market to sell that I ever had, you know?
Wow.
And so, you know, and then I just started building it, you know, and some of them speak to social issues and some of them are just cool. You know, some of them speak to brands.
Yes.
And, you know, to me, like utilizing like the 13 stripes and the 50 stars, like that's the construct of America. That's the composition that we could all agree on, but it's not everybody's. But when you get to the aesthetic, like to me, that's when I define or I really speak to different people's experiences and things like that, you know? And so that's what the American Flag Remix does. And in 2013, I'm proud to say that I got the trademark on the word American Flag Remix.
Oh, dope. That's great to know.
Yeah. And I just got the trademark on dope also, like my dope fart. So.
I love that.
And I was saying that because you just said dope, but.
You know. No pun intended, but pun intended. It's crazy because as I look at all the different versions, you're right. I forgot about the Levi's joint because when I think about that flag, I think about the matte black joints that you did,
right.
Some with the speakers. They were just so bold, so mm-hmm. bold. And then, you know, even for me, bro, you were talking about the commonality for everybody on the flag of 13 stripes and 50 stars. But then your interpretation of it that you create with your craft and your art is different for every piece.
Correct.
I'm even thinking about myself in the journey with the American flag and its construct of today. And I got to be completely honest with you. For years, pre-Obama,
mm-hmm.
I would see a flag and not think anything of it. The American flag would be up anywhere. Schools,
right.
Neighborhoods, people's homes. And I would think nothing of it. It just meant that's the American flag.
Right.
Trump comes into office. The minute I see now, and this is just me, and I don't know if this is anybody else. When I see American flags like waving outside of somebody's home, my first inclination is for some reason that might be a Trump home. And I don't know if it's me. I don't know what it is, but something
it's
changed.
Yeah, like I don't think that it's just you because I felt the same way at different times, you know?
Mm.
And so, you know, that's like honest. And so to me, like that speaks to like what the American Flag Remix is about. And I think like, you know, one thing that Trump did, and I know like I got a homeboy that I play football with, John Klasky. Like I just made a flag for him. And his goal is to take the whole feeling and energy of the flag back from like the MAGA style Republican.
Mm.
And which I think that's a great notion. And it's like, you know, to me, you know, like when he started, like, you know, with specifically Donald Trump, like when he kind of started going down the pathway of really separating us versus them, you know, and a lot of, you know, your racist ideological Americans started really tapping into that and showing up at his rallies with the flag, American flag and the Confederate flag, like right next to it. I was like, you know, how much of an oxymoron is that? Because those two flags fought against each other. So I thought it took it to some whole other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree. And, you know, like what I mentioned earlier, you know, the flag, the American flag remixes, they speak to the good, bad, and the difference of America. I mean, yeah, like, you know, I think what he did and the tonality that he set and some of people's feelings that he unearthed, you know, were definitely extremely negative, you know, but then at the same time, you know, you feel a certain way when you see the United States 4x100 meter relay running around the track after they just broke the world record, you know, in a relay.
You're right.
Like, yeah. So it's kind of like both, but, you know, I definitely, you know, I agree with what you're saying. And I think that, you know, you know, when you think about it, then I asked, you know, when I was telling you that I was kind of like experiencing the same thing that you felt, I was like, you know, would I probably want to be on any other country on the planet? Probably not.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So So I think, you know, we have to have conversations with people that, you know, obviously we love and care about, but that also people that we don't necessarily agree with, because a lot of truths are universal, you know.
That's right.
We get to those truths. And I think that at the end of the day, I think most people really just care about being able to live their life in peace and a preservation and being able to provide and protect their family. Like, I think that's the thing that we could all agree on, just like we could all agree that American flag is 13 stripes and 50 stars. Yeah. So I think, like, when you start breaking down, like, those barriers, you know, of just, you know, religious perspectives and political perspectives, I think that you start to see that we're more alike and more connected than we actually think that we are.
Well, you know, it's so crazy. You know, I think as an artist and a creative director, you obviously engage with multiple artistic mediums in,
correct,
you know, sharing your craft. And I got to think that you have to believe that this multifaceted approach definitely contributes to building a very dynamic and inclusive creative culture within the wider artistic community.
Right. No, I agree 100%. And, you know, like when I was in art school, I got my degree in painting, you know. But one thing that I didn't understand and I didn't like is that the painting school, or like fine art school, was separated from the design and advertising school. You know, and that was kind of separated from photography, and sculpture was on its whole, you know, a whole different thing. And I was like, man, it should really be connected, because that's the way that we live, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a great painter could help make a great advertising campaign for a brand even better, you know.
That's right.
But it was so separate. And, you know, like with myself, you know, like I've had plenty of people, you know, on the brand side and in the fine art world say that I should kind of stick to one thing and do one thing, you know, and I've tried at different times, but like, that's not the way that I'm built, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is why I work on a bunch of different bodies of work at the same time, because I work on what's moving me and inspiring me at the moment, you know, and I couldn't do it, you know, any other way. I know other people that can, but that's just not the way that I'm wired. And so, you know, going back to, you know, what you were saying about the creative direction in the fine art and inclusivity, I was like, it should always be that way. Like, like one of the things that, you know, I hope I do before I leave this earth is really help to break down the narrative of what an artist is, you know. And you know, like when I was in school, like an artist was a guy with a beret or a hat like this, maybe with a cigarette, a bottle of wine, and just kind of walking around with a paintbrush and
exactly.
And it's like, nah, like an artist is more than that. Like an artist is that, but an artist also designs Nike and
right.
also designs the iPhone,
that's
and
right.
branding, and he helps to, you know, to you know, help visualize like what new community develops and
that's right.
New community develops and things like that look like. So to me, like, that's an artist, and I think like that's the type of artist that I am.
Yeah, and you are 1,000%. I think that's a great segue into your most recent project of the Cyphers. And so what brought that about? I mean, I have a sense of what brought it about, but I'd love to hear.
Yeah, because, I mean, we had a conversation like when I was, you know, early, like within the process.
Oh, and you were so hyped, bro. Let me tell you something.
Yeah,
when I saw you on the street, you were like in the candy store, bro, with this idea.
Man, I was like, you know what? Going back to like my whole origins is just like, you know, a young man growing up in St. Louis, like I was a breakdancer. I was a B-boy before that. And along that timeline, like I was also like a graffiti artist. You know, I was a terrible rapper, you know. And so I was really like into hip hop. Like I remember, you know, like the first time that I heard Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, The Message. I remember the first time that I heard Run DMC, Sucker MC in the back of my homeboy Patrick Bridges' car. Like I remember these things, and I remember like how it made me feel. I remember like the anticipation of going to like, you know, like underage clubs, you know, at that time and battling other, you know, other breakdance crews and things like that. And so I've always thought about like how can I create something or portray like the four elements of hip hop, really specifically at first, like breakdancing in a way that just doesn't feel like that's a picture of a breakdancer, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, obviously Cypher, like if you know anything about hip hop, you know about B-boy Cyphers and you know about, you know, rap battle Cyphers and things like that. And so, you know, when I think about Cypher, I think about the energy and I think about the pattern making process that dancers create, especially like if you're looking at them over top, you know? And mm-hmm. so Cypher is an Arabic word, you know? And so even when I started thinking about the artwork and the imagery, then I started thinking about just Islamic symbolism and sacred geometry shapes and things like that. And then I started just really thinking about like mandala patterns. And so, you know, I wanted the artwork to play a little bit of odd tricks, you know, with you when you look at it. I didn't want it to be obvious, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, let me figure out how to make a pattern out of these dancers. And I started photographing dancers, you know, over a year ago, you know. Then I started photographing graffiti artists and things like that. And the goal was, you know, can I make these feel like patterns and shapes that you would not under, you know, that you would not get when you first see it. So even if
that's right, in discovery.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's, you know, like that's a local Atlanta dancer named Full Metal, you know, and, you know, and so I really thought through that. And then it's just been a journey. I mean, you know, like how the creative process takes you down a rabbit hole. So then I started reading about like Nikola Tesla, just, you know, all different other types of things. And I was like, man, let me stay focused, you know, but it really speaks to that. And so ultimately, like, I think the body of work addresses connectivity and the spirit of competition, you know? And so I started photographing, you know, dancers and graffiti artists initially, and some MCs, some famous, like when I seen you, you know, like I got an opportunity to photograph Chuck D from Public Enemy, you know, mm-hmm. who was my playlist, you know, when I was playing football in college. But I got to photograph him. I photographed T.I. and his son, Damani. I got a bunch of other people scheduled, you know, but then I started photographing like fighters, you know, like boxers and MMA artists and track and field athletes, because, you know, when I was a break dancer, you had to have courage to get in that circle. You know,
courage.
But you had to have courage, you know, so everything that you practiced for the last 2 weeks, do you have the courage to hop in that circle and show it? And so, but when you're in that circle, like, it's almost like you lose track of time and everything is connected, whether you dancing along with other dancers and y'all just passing it around, or whether you're battling somebody. And so to me, I think fighters, it's the same thing, you know, and even track and field athletes, like, it's the same thing. You know, it is strategy and things that go on in both sports. And so, you know, that is what I've, you know, kind of like opened up the subject matter to. But again, like, I'm extremely excited. You know, the response has been very, very powerful. And, you know, like right now, I'm just figuring out what is the best way for me to display or show like this body of work, because I believe that it can only be seen together, you know?
Yeah.
And it can't be, I can't separate it. So well, look through that process now.
Yeah, you can't separate it, because that's part of the theme of the essence of what you created. You said it yourself, right, that when it, in the cipher, there's this connectivity. And as yep. you were just talking about these different areas where the cipher has resonated, I'm now thinking, wait, actually, this cipher concept is even bigger. This cipher yep. concept is something that should come into corporate boardrooms. It should
Correct.
campaign development. It should Correct. Come into team building. All these different things. It should be
look
least
it up, of, master.
Come on, listen.
Man, look it up, baby.
You know this is what I do, bro. Come on.
That's what you do.
But this is why, you know, as I'm listening to your definition, this you're creating a culture of connectivity that everybody should be entering into ciphers together in all facets of life.
Agreed. Because, man, it's like the people, like, I addressed this, like, I had a retrospective art show, you know, like, a while back, in October. And one of the things that I addressed the whole crowd, because, man, I had my kindergarten teacher showed up. You know, like a bunch of my mentors, my godfather, my mom was there, you know, my wife flew in, like my high school art teacher, my high school journalism teacher, the chancellor from my university, and they asked me, they was like, you know, how could you do what you did and what kept you going? I was like, man, like all of the people in this room, like they would not allow me to fail. And so I was never scared because everybody was always, you know, pushing me forward, you know? And so like that connectivity conversation, you know, like I believe like you don't get anywhere by yourself.
No.
You know?
No.
And so that connectivity, that, you know, people extending things for you and giving you a hand and you playing it forward and you passing that energy around, like that's what the cipher is all about.
I love it. You know, as a Black artist, I would think, who's on a mission to kind of convey unique experiences through art, what challenges have you encountered in navigating kind of this art world, and how have these challenges kind of influenced the themes and the messages of your work?
You know what? I think like the challenges that I have faced in the art world, I think it probably speaks more to the infrastructure, you know, and the political side of actually doing business, you know, in the art world, you know. And so it's like the art world is a whole other animal, but I think the art community and art collectors, like they kind of like go in and out of it. And so, you know, like I did a show in 2018, and it was called Favorite Things. And it was probably like my biggest show. You know, it was a collection of a bunch of things that I've done over the years, and I just had them all in one space, you know. And as successful as that show was, you know, like for the most part financially and through, you know, social media imprints, that same week, like I got rejection letters from different galleries and things like that, you know, that I'd reached out to about carrying my work, you know. And so, you know, I can take that and I can look at it in a way that I feel defeated, you know, and I feel that the world is against me, especially the art world. But the way that I look at it is like, you know, just like playing sports, like, let me go figure out, I'm going to go around it, I'm going to go over it, and I'm going to go through it. And so, you know, like with the adversity that I faced, I've always pretty much pushed through, you know, not, you know, tried my best to not define my success and my journey by anything that I see, read, or hear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got around it, you know, with that. And I think another thing that kind of helps me that's almost therapeutic is helping like young artists and things like that navigate around like different situations also.
You know?
Because, you know, it is easy, you know, like now, like with social media influencers and things like that, like it is easy to feel that you're not on the right path. You know, and everybody's path and everybody's journey is their journey.
Yeah.
And everything we see on social media isn't real. You know,
at all.
So to me, you know, like how, I mean, you have kids, and I know it's been times where you've been telling and instructing and correcting your kids on something, and he's like, damn, I need to do that myself, you know? And so,
at the time when we're sharing this insight, a lot of it is reaffirming for ourselves, like reminding ourselves of the work we have to do, 1,000%.
Yeah. And so, you know, even when I'm talking to artists, you know, and things like that, like I'll laugh because I'm like, damn, I should probably take that advice myself.
No, you know, it's crazy. Let me ask something. So in your opinion, though, what steps then can the art community take to kind of better support and promote the work of Black artists in particular? And how can these efforts kind of contribute to a more equitable and inclusive representation within the art world?
So I think, one, it's definitely like an education process that's been going on for the last 5 or 10 years with the African-American community as far as like fine art, you know, and the purchasing of art. Because, you know, most artists, they want to sell their work, you know, and some artists need to sell their work to survive. And so, you know, like I've always felt that like my competition is not necessarily other artists, but it's like luxury items. You know, it's like,
right,
do I get this painting or do I buy this watch? You know, do I get this flag or do I buy this Birkin bag? You know? And so I think, you know, like African Americans, like we're the number one consumers in the world, you know, but we should also be the number one consumers of our artwork as well, you know? And so I think the ways that, you know, like the African American community can support is obviously whether you're purchasing an artist's artwork, showing up at an artist show or not, like it's other ways that, you know, artists can be supported, like, you know, brand identity campaigns, you know, like what if you used, you know, an artist's artwork, you know, like on movie sets or in advertising campaigns and things like that. And then also, you know, just really like understanding the financial gains that could be had with purchasing fine art.
Because it's generational.
You know, like, I mean, it's like when you see, you know, when you hear about people buying like a Basquiat for X millions or buying a Picasso for X millions, like that artwork wasn't X millions when they got it.
That's right.
You know? And so right. Like, you have to understand that, okay, well, you know, supporting this artwork, I mean, it's, you know, you're putting money back into the artist and his community, but also it could be an investment piece for your family. So
right.
I think that bit of knowledge, you know, is definitely something that I think is extremely important.
Yeah. A little while ago, you were talking about, you know, we can't do anything on our own, or the power of collaboration. I would frame that up in, right? And working right. together. Was there a particular project that you can remember where you collaborated with other Black artists to collectively kind of express a shared experience or experiences, and how that collaboration kind of enhanced the depth and impact of that artistic narrative?
You know what? I would, at the top of my tongue, you know, I would say like the dope artwork that I do.
Okay.
You know, like when I first did it, when I first started creating those pieces, it was a philanthropic effort. You know, it was a hip hop fundraiser for one of the guys in Criss Cross. You know, I didn't have a lot of hip hop artwork at that time, but I was like, the greatest hip hop word of all time is dope. So I started doing these pieces, you know, but then I was like, man, it's a great way to collaborate with other artists, you know? And so I worked with some amazing artists on these dope pieces, as well as photographers, you know, all Atlanta based. And so 2019, I did an event, and it was called the Dope Show ATL, where, you know, I worked with six of Atlanta's, you know, hottest photographers, and, you know, rented out the top of a hotel in Buckhead. And literally, we just photographed people sitting on my dope box the whole day. Like it was catered, you know, it was sponsored by Campari Spirits, and I forgot the vodka brand, but it was catered by them, sponsored by them. And it was a great time. I mean, it was literally like people coming in, posing and making art, you know.
So
I took those pieces, and then I made dope pieces out of those. And then I worked with artists like Paper Frank and Hobo Inc. and Melissa Mitchell, Jeremy Brown, I hope I'm not leaving out, to create other dope pieces, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, artist, it always seems like it's a solo show. But, you know, I wanted to show that artists could actually work together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it did that, you know. It's like, you know, ego-less, it's fun, it's, you know, it's experimental. And it's kind of like how we were when we were kids, you know what I mean? It's like kind of taking us back to that, like just make something cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've collaborated with a bunch of artists over the years, and I really enjoyed that process. And to me, it pushes me back into like my creative direction, art direction mode, like when I was at LaFace, you know, like I got to work with incredible photographers and designers and illustrators there. And I really enjoyed that project. Like I would be so excited to see like what these other people would come up with, you know.
Well, you know, you're talking about different communities and different people, and I would love to hear how you perceive the role of art in fostering kind of this empathy or this understanding across different communities, and how do you aim to kind of bridge cultural gaps and foster kind of a sense of unity through your creative endeavors?
Man, I think the beauty of art, you know, like whether it's like, you know, visual art or music, is the ability that it has to broadcast and inspire at scale, you know. Ooh. And so like when you think about a lot of simple things like the Batman symbol, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and the cross, you know, and what those things mean immediately when you see them, like art has the power to do the exact same thing, you know. And I think that, you know, a lot of times it gives people in underserved communities the ability to create something like with their hands at the foundational or the grassroots level that, you know, if it catches fire, you know, it could inspire our whole nation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, you know, I mean, for instance, like the image that I can't think of his name, the guy that does Obey, you know, that did the Barack Obama image.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just like, I can't believe I can't, you know, because I'm a fan of his work, but I can't think of his name right now. But like that image of Barack Obama that he created, I mean, that image was extreme. Shepherd Fairman.
Thank you.
You were Googling it?
Oh, I was
like,
it up, bro.
I'm 55. I got to write everything down, bro. But yeah, but like that image, like he did an incredible job and it just meant so much when you seen it. Like it looked like hope.
Yeah.
And so to me, like that is what art can do, you know? And then I think also, you know, when I talk to kids, you know, I tell them that everything that they own, everything that they look at was created by an artist.
That's right. You
know? And so to me, kids, I haven't met a kid that didn't have an idea, you know? And so to me, like if you have an idea that kind of came out of nowhere, I mean, it comes from somewhere, but you kind of develop things out of nowhere. Like I think that is the beginning of the definition of you becoming an artist, you know? Now, it might not be painting, might not be sculpture, but the ability to think and problem solve and get to a solution, I think like the art is within that. And so that is something that I also think like within communities, especially like with young people, like showing them that if they have a creative spirit, they can impact and change the world, you know? And to me, like that's another one of the powers that, you know, art has, which, you know, what I said, the ability to inspire and broadcast that at scale.
No, so you get the power and you get the magnitude. So with that, what kind of perceptions or stereotypes or narratives do you aim to kind of change or evolve through your gift and craft of art?
You know what? Like things that I have addressed through my work, because like sometimes I'll do things that speak to social issues. And like I mentioned, sometimes I do things like that all Black American flag is just cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like one of the things that I did a show on like in 2016, the name of the show was called My Boyfriend is Black. And the show was inspired by me and my wife growing up in St. Louis. And we've been together since 1985. And so,
wow.
You know, we met in high school and, you know, the odds were heavily against us. Like St. Louis was very segregated, you know, certain areas were extremely racist. And so we would kind of have to be careful, like where we would go at times, you know.
Wow.
And so, you know, like everybody has heard the, or heard versions of like, you know, like a regular, you know, a regular interracial couple with just like, you know, just myself and my wife. It's you know, it's an issue, but if I was Michael Jordan or a celebrity, then it wouldn't be an issue.
So,
you know, so the artwork really spoke to America's views on interracial relationships, past and present, you know, but it just wasn't white and Black. Like it was just anything that was probably taken, you know, if you looked at it, it wouldn't be your stereotypical norm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what was cool about that is that I did the show, you know, and I advertised, you know, promoted on social media, things like that. But I had a bunch of people that came from out of state that I have never met. Ooh. Because they have never seen anything that really spoke to them and their dynamic and their relationship like that.
Mm.
So that was very inspiring and rewarding, you know, and it was just a little bit of therapy for like, you know, like me and my wife and everything that we had gone through. And experience and just the fight to stay together, you know?
Mm.
You know, I think that, and then I did a show in 2019 and it was called A Million Likes. And that was about, it was sarcasm and satire, but it was really speaking to people, you know, losing themselves and their soul, you know, getting caught up in just like celebrity and doing things for the gram, you know? And so like when I look at where we are now, and especially like with artificial intelligence and things like that, I'm like, man, like we're going the wrong direction fast. And I remember like in a brand book, I think it was probably like 2000, and like right around when Facebook and MySpace was really starting to bubble, I think that might've been 2003, or, you know, something like that. But I wrote in this brand book that I created, I was like, social media will eventually decide the fate of everybody.
Oh. Know?
And I remember, and I had a pitch meeting with like, I think it was folks at Coke. And one of the executives like, yeah, you should probably take that out because, you know, like we're really into, you know, like social media, things like that. And when I look at where we are now, I'm like, Jesus, man, you know, so.
Yep. No, you're on to something. And you know, it's crazy when you talk about the impact of social media and the fact that it's a contrived space of content, right? It's a very manipulated one by those at Instagram, at these platforms, right? They're dictating what you can see, when you can see. And I'll tell you, man, my guy Gavin over at Supervision, great brand, great dude, great creative, great artist, great visionary. I mean, he had a campaign recently at the end of last year, and he said something, vision over algorithm. Mm-hmm. Yo, maintain your vision and don't let it be dictated by the algorithm. Because so often we get caught up in, oh my gosh, nobody liked this picture.
Right.
Nobody liked this comment. Nobody liked this service, you know, on social. So means it's not right. It's not good. It's not worthy. No, dog, keep moving on your vision and don't let the algorithm dictate the impact that you think and know this should have. Because all these social platforms are contrived platforms that are being manipulated by others behind the scenes to dictate who they want to put on the platforms and when.
Correct. And you know, like when you see news feeds and things like that on what TikTok shows, you know, people in America versus in China, you know, and you like, and even when you share that information with people in America, like nobody acts accordingly. Like, let me clean it up. Like they're still doing it for the likes, and that's like that is mind blowing to me.
Yeah, yeah,
it's mind blowing to me. So it's like I don't know. You know, like, I mean, I jokingly say this, you know, but I'm serious when I say it. It's like the only way that we could, you know, course correct, I think, like where we are right now is an alien invasion.
That, how about that?
Like it has to be something that massive, because if not, it's like the Wild Wild West, man. It's like stuff is all over the place. Things that you see and you don't read, it's like they making fake meat. You know what I mean? It's just, we have some real interesting times right now, Aster. Hey, no. What are the ages of your kids?
So my oldest is 18, my middle is 16, and my youngest is 11, all girls.
Okay. So the 11 and 16, like I know that, you know, like you can have better, you know, you can have more serious conversations with your oldest, but the 11 and 16, like, they probably really look at, like, social devices. I mean, you know, like...
Oh, no, they're on their phone. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of time and energy and consumption that just that phone and all those platforms have in their life and what they're trying to gravitate to. And that's why I try to have as many real conversations with them as possible to ensure that they are grounded and they're not being led and dictated by the algorithm.
Correct. I think, I mean, boys are affected. I think it affects girls more, but everybody is affected.
Everybody.
So I think, yeah, you really have to have, like, great dad conversations.
Oh, you know, and, like present. You got to be present. You got to be present. So, you know, we've talked about your, you know, artistic gifts and how you kind of express them, but how do you ensure that you're using them as a form of being a change agent and, like, for collective betterment? I always like to say, worldly collective betterment.
Like, honestly, like I the effort that I put in with the youth, you know, I think it's the youth, because sometimes, you know, like people that are our age or maybe even a little bit younger, like you're not going to get them to change your mind, you know, but you can inspire kids to do incredible and wonderful things, you know? And so, you know, like for years, you know, like I coach sports, you know, like I coach, you know, like my son all the way now, he, you know, he's playing sports in college, but, you know, like I coach track and field.
Track and field.
Yeah, football. Like I help lacrosse and just, man, speaking to them kids and getting them to believe in themselves and letting them understand that anything is possible while, you know, teaching them to be accountable.
Yeah.
You know, and letting them understand that nobody in the world really cares about your excuses, you know. And so I thought that, like, I really took a lot of pride in that. And I know that, like, I impacted a lot of young people's lives through that. And now, you know, like, I do a lot of creative work, you know, with the Boys and Girls Clubs of Southeastern Michigan. And what I love about that is I'm able to create things that make the kids' eyes light up when they walk into space. You know, because you know, like how if you ever did after school programs and things like that, like, you know how it was when you kind of walk in there and it's like, guys, everything is drab. And sometimes the counselors don't even want to talk to you. And you right. know how that feels.
Yep.
I was always like, man, like if the kid walked in and felt like he was in a superhero movie, would that change the way that he thought about himself? Would that give him a whole different energy? Because I know the power that images have to create and inspire people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like a year, I would call it a year residency with them, like working on their brand and helping them kind of create like new tools and imagery and assets and a little bit of creative strategy. And what I loved about it is it combined like all of my passions from kids, you know, youth, sports, entertainment, and art, you know. And so, like, you know, I make sure that, you know, within that, like they, you know, within the aesthetic, like they get it's little nuggets that are buried into the design and things like that, that make them try to figure things out and learn things, you
mm-hmm.
know? Because I think, you know, the best learning comes from discovery, you know?
Yeah, and access.
So, yeah, yeah. And so I think it's that, you know, and I think also just the conversation of an artist, you know, you can do anything, you know, you
That's
can
right.
play anything, you know? And so to me, like, that is kind of like my social charge on how I feel like I could really, you know, like make a difference, because I know that I have a gift to connect with kids. If you were to ask my wife, she would say that I'm still a kid too.
Yeah.
But
we all know.
But yeah, and it's like, and honestly, you know, like I enjoy being around like young people and having conversations with kids and hearing what they think about things, you know. So I think that to me, like that whole energy and experience and those times are super dope.
Yeah, I think it's also to that degree, DL, I think it's part of our responsibility as you know, children of God who've all been given these gifts. And these gifts are meant to be shared with many others. And some, unfortunately, don't get shared at all.
Correct.
But for you, somebody who's obviously tapped into the gift that God has put into you, I mean, part of the role and the responsibility is to engage with those younger than you who have not been through as many things or any of the things that you've been through to date that you
right.
can now inform them of so that their trajectory can be supercharged.
Yes.
From that of what you went through. There's no way any youth who has access to you or has around you or knows you, there's no way that they should come and encounter the same hurdles, challenges, obstacles that you did without you providing them the nuggets of, here's how I maneuvered through it. Here's what you probably could do when you encounter it, so that you
right.
can get through it a lot smoother, quick. Like, that's part of your responsibility, bro. I'm sorry.
No, I agree 100% because, like, we're all, like, one left turn away from our lives being a
Man.
Totally different situation where it is.
Say that again.
You know?
One.
Like, I remember, you know, like, I grew up, you know, for the most part, like, single parent home, you know, between my mom, my aunt, my grandmother, you know, and man, like my godfather, like the energy and time that he put into me, you know, like everything that I learned about being a man, especially like in the construct of my family, I learned from him. Like he had three daughters, you know, and then it was a bunch of guys in the neighborhood and he's like, you know, you running track, you ain't missing practice, you know, like that tough love thing.
Discipline.
I mean, man, like this dude, like he did like literally, like he was definitely like my father figure, man.
Mm.
And so, but he didn't have to do it. You know what I mean? Like he had a wife and he had kids and he had his own things, but man, like he, like, he invested in myself, like he invested in so many young men, you know. So shout out to Mr. King if you watch this. But I feel the exact same way. Like, I feel like it's my responsibility to I know how far a conversation can go.
Yes.
Yeah. I know the difference that it makes, man. Just a conversation or the time of day. Like, I know how, like, little things like that don't cost us anything could change the world for somebody.
Change the world for somebody and somebody's around them.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're helping to unlock that potential gift. And it's such a great segue into, you know, we always end these sessions with talking about, you know, what are the three seeds you want to leave with the stewards of culture moving forward, you know, very much like farmers, right? With a seed plant, so I'd love to hear from you, what are those three things? Because it's a great follow-up from the sentiment that you just had, or what was done for you and
right.
the impact of a conversation. So what are those three things that you would want to leave?
So I would say, one, like, anything is possible. You know, anything is possible. Like, just, you know, set your goal sheet, write your goal sheet down, and just go for it, you know, and do it. And that leads into, like, my favorite quote, you know, I think it's a Muhammad Ali quote, like, I've never let anybody talk me into not believing in myself, you know? And so, like, I would say that, like, anything is possible, and write that Muhammad Ali quote down. My second thing, man, and this was kind of like somewhat relayed to me by a gentleman that came to see me in art instruction school. And this, this was probably 1986, and this stayed with me forever. He told me, like, if you're an artist, you got to let the world know, you know?
Ooh.
And so, like, whatever it is that you do, don't be afraid to share your gifts with the world, you know? And sometimes sharing your gifts can be local. Sometimes they can be global, but don't be afraid to share your gifts with the world, you know? And I would say probably the last one, and this relates to every single thing. Like, if you always give things, like, every single thing you got, God is going to make it work out for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Man, those are three amazing ones. And I think, you know, to many, you're a testament to those things. And I thank you for being the individual that you are. I've always had a gravitation towards your spirit, to your energy, to the things you represent. Will continue to be that, and just ask that you continue to do the things that you're doing in the way that you're doing it, because, bro, it's needed and it's making a difference.
Man, thank you very much. And, you know, my sentiments are this, you know, the exact same, Astor, man. Like, I think we met like right before the Olympics, you know, like 1996.
Mm-hmm.
You were the second person that I ever met from Nike.
I remember you telling me a story.
Actually, the second Eakin. You
the
know,
Eakin,
like,
that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I mean, I'll never forget it. Hey, you've been the same ever since then. Like, you've never changed, no matter what business cards you've had, you know, and things like that. Like, you've always been the same guy. And I think, you know, like, you taking your time to create platforms like this that, you know, from what I gather, extremely, you know, positioned to inspire other people through storytelling and experience, I think is great, man. So I appreciate what you're doing.
We truly appreciate your support because it helps us fulfill our mission of promoting cultural awareness and personal development. Please click the subscribe button below to help ensure and solidify our mission.